So suppose you could be 23 years old again, just out of school, and God came to you in a vision and said, I'm going to grant you the right to be or do anything in your life that you want to be or do. What do you choose? How would you answer that question? Somebody tell me, if you could be or do anything in life, if you were 23 years old, what would it be? What would you choose? What? Drummer? Actress?
Archaeologist?
We could go on and on, right? It's interesting, though, that the first thing on our minds for none of us is, I want to be a servant. Yet that's exactly what Jesus in our gospel passage today says should be our highest aspiration. I don't know about you, but that raises a lot of questions within me. Exactly what does that mean, and why on earth would Jesus want to live us to live that way? Let's see if we can figure that out. As you know, we are in the midst of a sermon series called The Beauty of Christ Living in Me. Each week, we're picking a different gospel passage and asking, what is it that Jesus does in this story that is so beautiful and so compelling? And what would it look like to incorporate those characteristics into our lives? The scene for today's gospel story is the Last Supper. The way I picture it, everything was perfectly set up. Jesus' favorite Jerusalem restaurant was going to cater the meal. MCL, or whatever was the ancient Jerusalem equivalent of MCL. Hey, it doesn't make me a bad person just because MCL is my favorite restaurant. It may make me an old person, but it doesn't make me a bad person. Jesus, as I imagine it, wanted everything to be perfect in this moment. Our gospel text tells us that he loved his disciples to the very end, and this was the last great gift that he could give to them, a wonderful meal together and one last chance to connect. But as the meal begins, something isn't quite right. Something critical is missing. You see, in Jesus' time and culture, when there was a dinner party, it was customary for the host of the dinner party to assign a particular servant to wash and dry the feet of guests as they arrived. In that desert culture, sandaled feet would become dusty and dry and hot. It was incredibly soothing and refreshing for water to be splashed over your feet and gently dried with a towel. But at the Last Supper, there was no servant to be assigned to wash the feet of all who were present until, our text tells us, John 13:14, Jesus got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Wait a minute. What's he doing? He poured water into a basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel. Simon Peter says, Jesus, this is all wrong. It's inappropriate. No, you will never wash my feet. I should be washing your feet. Jesus says to Simon Peter, in effect, Peter, you need to let me do this. And one by one, Jesus washes the feet of his disciples. With each one, I picture him looking into their eyes and saying, thank you for walking this journey with me. I love you. And then when he returns to the table, verse 12 says that he looked at his disciples and said, do you know what I've done to you? In other words, do you understand the significance of what I'm trying to communicate to you by what I have just done? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for that's what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done. And so Jesus, Lord of the cosmos, washes our feet and takes joy in doing it. I love what I see in Jesus in this gospel passage. I find myself drawn to it like a moth to a flame. I find myself thinking, surely in this passage, Jesus is trying to show me the way, the truth, the life. But as I mentioned earlier, I also have lots of questions about what it is that Jesus is trying to communicate in this passage. Exactly what does it look like in our life today to live what Jesus is asking us to do in this passage? What does it mean for us to live as a servant? And why on earth would any of us want to do that? Let's tackle the first question first. What does it look like to live the way Jesus is asking us to in today's gospel passage? For starters, we can tell from what he says and does in this passage, it's not about your station in life. As Lord and teacher, Jesus had the most power and status of anyone in his social circle. And he did not renounce that power and status. He was their Lord and teacher. And so what Jesus is talking to us about in this gospel passage today is not about the roles, the particular roles that life assigns us, but rather how we conduct ourselves in those roles. It's possible to be the CEO of a corporation and to do that in the way that Jesus is talking about in today's gospel passage. It's also possible to be a maid or a groundskeeper and not do what Jesus is asking for in today's gospel passage, because what he's talking about is living with the heart of a servant in whatever life calls us to do. Let me share two different and competing paradigms, two different and competing approaches to life that might help us to better picture what Jesus is asking from us. Intuitively, we tend to live this way. We intuitively tend to approach life with me at the center of everything. And in this way of being, my goal is to get as much of what I want as I possibly can out of my life and out of each situation that I encounter in life. We want what we want, what we want. Things like power, reputation, money, nice stuff, a great job, a wonderful spouse, health, fame. There are things that we want intuitively, instinctively, and we think, if only I can acquire and accumulate as many of these things as possible, that will be how I can live my best life now. And we end up in this model living life as a taker, a hoarder, a magnet, a black hole. You're familiar with the concept of a black hole. It's a space in the cosmos that is so dense that anything that comes anywhere near it gets sucked into it, disappears into it, and it never gets full. That's an egocentric form of living. I'll take as much as I can get, and yet it's never quite enough. A 15-year-old got home from school one day, hungry. He looks around the house, can't find his mom anywhere, finally finds her in bed. "Mom," he says, "are you sick?" "Yes," she says, I feel terrible." "Well, Mom," he says, "don't worry about dinner. I'm getting pretty big now, and I'll be happy to carry you down to the stove." That's what you call an egocentric model of living life. It's all about me. It's all about how much can I get out of this situation. And yet, ironically, it's never enough. So then along comes Jesus, this revolutionary teacher, and says, "I have a better way. I'm going to ask you to turn life completely upside down and to dare to live counterintuitively in this second paradigm. Instead of me being at the center of everything, God is at the center of everything. And because God is love, as the Bible tells us, that means love is at the center of everything. And you and I are just a small part of
something much greater than ourselves. In the first paradigm, that which is at the center, me, functions like a black hole that tries to suck everything into it. By contrast, in this model, God at the center, God is like a star, like the sun, that gives energy rather than taking. That radiates energy out to each one of us who is part of something that is greater than ourselves. And in this model, you are here, just a small part of a greater interconnected whole. And your role in this second model is to receive as much of the love of God as you can, and then to give back to God and others as much of that love as you can. And when you love someone, what do you want to do? You want to serve them. You want to give to them. Seiko Sugimuchi is a pet lover. When she went to her vet one day to have one of her pets examined, the veterinarian, knowing that she was a pet lover, said, "Seiko, I've got this wild chipmunk that has been brought in here that I've been nursing back to health. I don't think he's going to live much longer, but he needs a good home. Would you consider taking him in?" She agrees to, takes the chipmunk home, names him Forte. He not only survives, he starts to thrive under Seiko's care. Before long, she says, "When I get home from the work at the end of the day, there's Forte cutting a figure eight on the carpet in front of me, running in circles, so excited. Mom's home, mom's home, mom's home." One of Forte's idiosyncrasies is that he hoards his most precious possession, walnuts. He gathers all of his walnuts at his bed as if to say, "These are mine, don't touch them." But over time, Seiko says, something strange began to happen. Every now and then, I'd find a walnut under my pillow where I sleep. And now, she says, half of all Forte's walnuts are under my pillow. As if to say, half of all I have is yours. Because when you love, that's what you do. You give. You serve, you share. It's spontaneous, it's natural. That is the model of living that Jesus calls us to: life as a servant, life as a giver. It's what Jesus means when he says in Matthew chapter 20, verse 26, "Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant." Do you want to have a great life? Then be a servant, Jesus says. "Just as I, the Son of Man, came not to be served, but to serve." If you want to live a great life, the secret formula, according to Jesus, is to adopt a servant's heart in all that you are called to do in this life. That's why I'm calling today's sermon the most important sermon ever, because Jesus in this passage of Scripture is giving us the formula for living our best life now. I love the way Richard Rohr puts this in his book. It's a brilliant book, if you haven't read it, called Falling Upward. Listen to Richard Rohr's words. There's a lot of wisdom in this. He says, "We all need to become aware of what we're really doing when we're doing what we're doing. Two people can have the same job description, and one is holding a subtle or not so subtle life energy, Eros, in doing his or her job, while the other is holding a subtle or not so subtle negative energy, Thanatos, while doing exactly the same job. In any situation, your taking or giving of energy is what you're actually doing. Everybody can feel, suffer, or enjoy the difference, though few can say what it is that's happening. Why do I feel so drawn to that person or so repelled from that person? What we all desire and need from one another is that life energy called Eros. It always draws, creates, and connects things." And there you have it in a nutshell. what it looks like to live with the heart of a servant. It means in the various situations of life, I step back and I ask myself, in situations large and small, what would it look like for me to infuse life energy into this situation? How can I give here instead of being a taker? The egocentric model of living asks, how much can I take out of this situation? The love-centric model says, how much can I give? A couple weeks ago, I took some suits and some pants into the dry cleaner. I got one of these 20% off coupons from the newspaper, and so I took my stuff in, and as I handed it across the counter, I mentioned, now I've got this coupon for 20% off. The clerk said, that's fine. And so this week I went back to get my clothes. And as I walked in and the clerk came to the front and rang things up, she said, okay, that will be $66.60. Now immediately I was a little bit on edge and sensed that something wasn't quite right here. And you can see why, right? Six, six, six. I mean, clearly the devil was in this somehow, right? So I said to the clerk, does that price include the discount for the coupon that I brought in? She said, oh, you brought in a coupon? I said, yeah, it was a coupon for 20% off. I presented it when I presented the clothes. She said, we don't have any 20% off coupons. I said, well, I saw it with my eyes. It was right. She said, where did you find that? I said, well, it was in one of these paper magazines, you know, in the newspaper. She said, we never have 20% off coupons. I said, well, I saw it myself, and I presented it when I came in. Let me look, she says, and she gets on her computer and proceeds to spend the next 5 minutes. And, you know, I'm starting to get impatient internally. I'm thinking to myself, I don't have time for this. Why is this taking so long? Apparently, they had listed every coupon they ever had there on their computer. She was looking through it. So she gets through all of that. And after about 5 minutes, she rings up everything again and retags everything and says, I'm going to give you $10 off. I said, well, thank you. That's not 20% off, but thank you. She says, it's more than 20%. Now I have reached the point in the conversation where welling up inside of me is this intuitive desire to spew Thanatos, negative energy, all over this situation. I want to say something like, you don't seem to understand what's going on here. I am the customer, you are the service provider. You are supposed to be serving me, and the customer is always right. I saw it with my own eyes. How dare you say that I'm trying to pull something over on you, and why don't you learn how to do math if you're going to be here at the counter? That's what I wanted to say. I wanted to remind her that I was Lord of this situation and she was there to serve me. But just then, I remembered that Richard Rohr quote that I just shared with you. And in that split second, I found myself asking, what would it look like to infuse life into this situation? And so I checked myself and I said, okay, if that's what it is, that's fine, we'll be done with it. Now, I don't get an A+ for that, maybe a B-, but it's a lot better than the D- that I was about to get, right? She then proceeded to take another 5 minutes to do something on her computer, ring everything up again, retag everything, and announced to me, I've taken $13.32 off. Ah, exactly 20%. Now, on the one hand, what I've just told you, it's nothing. On the other hand, it's everything. Because the fabric of your life and mine is made up of a million different situations like that that get woven together. We need to think about what we're really doing when we're doing what we're doing. And if we will be conscious of that and approach situations small and large with the heart of a servant, that's what Jesus is asking for from us in our gospel passage today. You may say, okay, I'm starting to better understand what it is that Jesus is asking for me in my life. But that still leaves a really important question. Why on earth would anybody want to live that way? I love the answer that Jesus gives in Luke 6:42. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put back into your lap. Key words, for the measure you give will be the measure you get back. Now, we are accustomed, most of us, if you've been in church much, of hearing this verse used in the context of our financial giving to God. And I think that is a fair application of the principle that Jesus states here. But if you look in context at what Jesus is saying in Luke chapter 6, he's applying this principle generally across the board in life. If I am giving out thanatos, negative energy, life is going to give me back negative energy. If I am giving out eros, positive energy, life has a way of giving me back that positive energy. If I am living as a taker, life is going to keep taking from me. If I am living as a giver, life will find ways to give back to me. It's what Jesus means when he says those enigmatic words in Mark 8:35. Those who want to save their life will lose it. Think about that. If we say, okay, I'm going to be Forte, that chipmunk, and gather as many walnuts as I can, and they're all mine. That is a prescription, Jesus says, for losing the very thing you're seeking, the gift of life. But, Jesus says, those who dare to lose their life for my sake, Jesus' sake, and the sake of Jesus' message, love one another, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, they are the ones who will save it. It's what Proverbs 27:20 means when it says hell and destruction are never full, so human eyes are never satisfied. The great irony of life is that if I live like a black hole, trying to take as much as I can get, suck up as much as I can get from every situation, I will never be satisfied. But if I live with a servant's heart, it will all be given to me, not in a crass materialistic sense, but in a divine, sublime, transcendent sense. Life will keep giving back to me a great abundance, more than I can imagine. This is a universal principle of life. What we put out there comes back to us. At a church on a Sunday morning, the pastor invited the children to come forward for the children's sermon. As the children came forward and gathered on the front steps, the pastor, in an offhanded way, said to one of the little girls, "That is a beautiful dress that you're wearing today." The little girl, with the innocence of childhood, blurted into the open mic, "Yeah, but my mommy says it's a bitch to clean." Be careful what you say. It has a way of coming back to you. What we put out there comes back to us. Jesus says, what you say in secret will be made known in the public square. If I am secretly cursing my enemy or that difficult coworker in my heart, then somehow that's going to come back to me too. But if in my heart I am striving to bless that difficult person, that blessing is going to come back to me too. Back in 1999, true story, in 1999, Kevin Stefan was serving as the bat boy on his bigger brother's baseball team. It was a baseball league in Lancaster, New York. One day, as one of the kids on the team was up in the batter's box getting ready to go up and hit, as he was on the warm-up deck, he was swinging his bat, getting loosened up, swinging it with all his force, and he didn't see Kevin as he walked up, and he swung his bat, and it hit Kevin square in the chest with full force. Kevin immediately lost consciousness, fell to the ground, and his heart stopped beating. He says, "All I knew is something hit me, I turned around, and I fell to the ground." Thankfully, there was a nurse in the stands watching her son play that day named Penny Brown, who rushed and provided CPR, got Kevin's heart restarted, saved his life. Later, his family would learn that Penny wasn't supposed to be at the game that day. She was supposed to be at work, but at the last minute, she'd gotten off so she could come see her son play. And her presence there saved Kevin Stefan's life. But the story doesn't end there. Fast forward another 7 years to 2006, to the Hillview restaurant in Depew, New York, where Penny Brown is sitting and enjoying a wonderful meal when she swallows wrong and starts to choke. She says, "I could get no air, and the food was going nowhere." As patrons began to realize what was happening, P- people started to panic and say, somebody do something. There was a worker in the kitchen at the restaurant, a volunteer firefighter who came rushing out up behind Penny, did the Heimlich maneuver, dislodged the food. She could breathe again. Saved her life. As she began to get her wits back about her, she looked in the eyes of the person who had just saved her and said, you look familiar. Haven't I seen you somewhere? It turns out the one who saved her 7 years later was the one who now, the one she had saved was now the one who rescued her 7 years later at 17 years old. Kevin Stefan happened to be there in the moment and more than returned the favor. What a beautiful, powerful reminder of the Luke 6:42 principle. Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, it will be put back in your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure that you get back. What we're talking about today is not about being a martyr. It's not about being miserable in life. It's about how we can live abundant life. What we all want, what we all seek. Jesus, in our gospel story today, he washes the disciples' feet. As far as we know, it's the only time he ever did that, one time. But in Luke chapter 7, it comes back to Jesus. A perfect stranger comes rushing up to him, and she washes his feet. And by the way, note in that passage, Jesus doesn't say, stop, stop, no, I'm going to wash your feet. No, one who knows how to give also knows how to receive. And then it happens again in John chapter 12. A completely different person, Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus, comes to Jesus and she washes his feet, this time with an incredibly expensive bottle of perfume. So that Jesus washes his disciples' feet once, and it comes back to him twice. Two for one. The second foot washing being this incredibly expensive perfume. That's what you call sowing and reaping. Living in abundance. Do you want that kind of abundance in your life? And I don't mean it in a crass sense. I mean it in the most refined sense. A life of peace and joy and purpose and meaning and satisfaction. Do you want that? Then let's dare to practice what Jesus is talking about in today's passage. Two, implementation suggestions. Adopt for yourself a personal mission statement that says very simply, I am here to serve. Then, number two, practice. In situations large and small, get in the habit of asking, am I giving life or taking it in this situation? How can I give life in this situation? Pick a circumstance or two in your life this week. Consciously ask that question and follow where the Spirit of God guides you and see if that doesn't make a huge difference. Let me close with this. A couple years ago, the San Francisco Chronicle did a front page story about a woman named Linda Wilson Allen. She is a mere bus driver in San Francisco. Why on earth was a mere bus driver making the front page of the newspaper? Remember, what matters in life is what we're really doing when we do what we're doing. Remember those words of Richard Rohr? Two people can have the same job description, and one is holding a subtle or not so subtle life energy, Eros, in doing his or her job, while the other is holding a subtle or not so subtle negative energy, Thanatos, while doing exactly the same job. In any situation, you're either taking or giving energy. Everybody can feel, suffer, or enjoy the difference. For her part, Linda Wilson Allen has decided that her mission as a bus driver is to love the people who ride her bus. And so she makes a point of getting to know those who regularly ride her bus, getting to know their names, getting to know what's going on in their life, so that when they get off the bus in the morning or in the evening and she says to them, have a good day, I love you, it's genuine. It's not a throwaway line. When people are moving a little slow, she slows down instead of trying to stay on schedule on the bus, believing that God will help her make that up later in her route. One morning, there was an elderly woman named Ivy who had a bunch of groceries that she was struggling to get onto the bus. Instead of getting exasperated with her, you're getting me behind schedule, Linda gifts up out of her driver's seat, gets off the bus, and helps Ivy get the groceries on the bus and get situated. Now, when Ivy's at the bus stop, if a bus comes and Linda's not driving it, she lets the bus pass. She waits until Linda's bus comes through because she wants to be on that bus. In another instance, a woman named Tanya, who was brand new to San Francisco, gets on the bus. It's obvious that she's a little disoriented, a little bit lost, that she's new to town. And so Linda says to her before she gets off the bus, "Hey, you're new in town, you don't know anybody. How about you come over to my house on Thanksgiving and kick it with me and my kids?" So that's what Tanya does. And now Tanya and Linda are good friends. Linda is creating such a beloved community on her bus that riders routinely give her scarves and plants and gifts. Some of her riders allow her to use their luxury vacation homes so that Linda Wilson Allen, a mere bus driver, vacations in the most exotic and extraordinary places. Talk about abundance. The servant among you will be the greatest of all. Give, and it will be given back to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, it will be put back into your lap. Do you want to live in that kind of abundance? Dare to live like Jesus. Dare to try what he says. Live to give and see what happens.